Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hi, and welcome to History Dweeb. I'm Tim Scott. Hope you enjoy the jazz music. It's appropriate for today's podcast. The topic of today's podcast is the Axeman of New Orleans, a notorious serial killer who terrorized the Big Easy back in 1918 and 1919. And this is part one of a two-part series on the New Orleans Axeman. In today's episode, we're going to discuss the attacks that occurred in the city of New Orleans in 1918 and 1919. We're going to talk about the victims of these attacks. And these murders remain unsolved up to today, over almost 100 years later. But in episode two, part two of this series, we're going to talk about the suspects, and we're actually going to reveal the identity of the New Orleans Axeman. First time ever. We think we've cracked this case, so you want to make sure to listen in to part two of this series. But today we're going to talk about the attacks themselves and the victims of these attacks. I'm joined by Chuck Hawk Walters and Brandy Herman. Welcome. They're my co-host. And we're going to start off with a reading of a letter that was allegedly written by the New Orleans Axeman during the height of his terror. So, Chuck, why don't you read us a letter and tell us what you think about it?
Esteemed mortal, they have never caught me and they never will. They have never seen me, for I am invisible, even as the ether that surrounds your earth. I am not a human being, but a spirit and a demon from the hottest hell. I am what you Orleanians and your foolish police call the Axeman. When I see fit, I shall come and claim other victims. I alone know whom they shall be. I shall leave no clue except my bloody axe, besmeared with blood and the brains of he whom I have sent below to keep me company. If you wish, you may tell the police to be careful not to rile me. Of course, I am a reasonable spirit. I take no offense at the way they have conducted their investigations in the past. In fact, they have been so utterly stupid as to not only amuse me, but his satanic majesty, Francis Joseph, etc. But tell them to beware. Let them not try to discover what I am, for it were better that they were never born than to then incur the wrath of the Axeman. I do not think there is any need for such a warning, for I sure feel sure the police will always dodge me, as they have in the past. They are wise and know how to keep away from all harm. Undoubtedly, you Orleanians think of me as a most horrible murderer, which I am. But I could be much worse if I wanted to. If I wished, I could pay a visit to your city every night. At will, I could slay thousands of your best citizens, for I am in close relationship with the Angel of Death. Now, to be exact, at 12:15 earthly time. On next Tuesday night, I'm going to pass over New Orleans. In my infinite mercy, I'm going to make a little proposition to you people. Here it is. I'm very fond of jazz music, and I swear by all the devils in the nether regions that every person shall be spared in whose home a jazz band is in full swing at the time I have just mentioned. If everyone has a jazz band going, well then, so much better for you people. One thing is certain, and that is some of your people who do not jazz it on Tuesday night, if there will be any, will get the axe. Well, as I am cold and crave the warmth of my native Tartarus, and it is about time I leave your earthly home, I will cease my discourse, hoping thou wilt publish this, that it may go well with thee. I have been, am, and will be the worst spirit that ever existed, either in fact or realm of fancy. The Axeman. From Hell. March 13th, 1919.
Thank you, Chuck, for that spine-tingling rendition of the Axeman letter. So what do you think, Chuck? This was written at a time at the height of the attacks. It was published in the New Orleans newspapers, and it created quite a stir. So what's your thoughts of this letter?
Was this letter real or a hoax? It was almost certainly a hoax. It was written by someone who was very well educated. There's no spelling errors, no grammatical errors. There's a reference to Tartarus, which in Greek mythology was the prison that they kept the Titans in. It was also a torture chamber, a torture dungeon. It was, my view, it was written by someone who was trying to see if he could get a reaction out of all New Orleans, and he certainly did. It was one of the loudest nights New Orleans had ever had that Tuesday night. There were no murders. The bars were open all night. There was jazz playing from everywhere. Another interesting thing is he says His Satanic Majesty Francis Joseph, etc., which is equating the King of Hungary with Satan, which is kind of interesting. So, but all in all, it seems to be a hoax, but no one ever really found out for sure.
Yeah, and I think that's what I think lends to the mystique of this whole thing. When you research this thing, it's hard to kind of separate fact from fiction because it's been kind of embellished over the years, and which makes it difficult 100 years later to go back and try to find out what is true and what is not true. The two things that we know, though, that are true are that the murders did occur. There was attacks. People were attacked in their home by someone with an axe. There were 12 victims total. That's one thing we know for sure. And the second thing we know for sure is that these attacks, these assaults remain unsolved. No one was ever held accountable for these vicious, bloody murders in 1918-1919. So those two things are true. We know those are facts. And the rest of it, a lot of it's been embellished over the years. And it's, like I said, it's kind of hard to sort fact from fiction. But let's take a step back, and Brandy, why don't you give us some background on these grisly murders?
Okay, so some of the history that goes on with this is, you know, starting back in around 1918, these people, like Tim said, started getting murdered in their homes, and they were killed with razor blades and mainly axes. Now, in the back, all of them always had a panel chiseled out of their door that the axe man slid through. And the axe was always, it was left at the scene. But not only was it left there, it was the property of the homeowner. So this guy was getting into their house and using their own axes to kill them. And this went on until 1919. And after the night that Chuck previously talked about with the jazz and everything, they didn't have any more murders. They have any more murders after that?
Yeah, there were a couple more attacks.
Were there?
Yeah, like two attacks after that.
But he tapered off after that.
Yeah.
I don't know, you know, we don't know if he got bored or what he was doing or if he moved on. But it was, this gentleman liked to exert control over all of his victims. And he generally, he went after men. And it looks to me like women were mainly an afterthought. If they were there, they would get an axe to the head. But it didn't look to me like they were prime targets. For a long time, they thought maybe they were targeting Italian grocers. But as it turns out, not all of the people were Italian grocers. They thought for a long time they might be mob hits or the Black Hand. And it doesn't look like that was the case, mainly because, especially back in those times, the mob lived by a strict code, and one of those codes was you didn't go after the women and the children, which was not the case here. So, you know, like I said, this went on. It went on from, you know, 1918, 1919. There was some stuff that went on in 1911 that was attributed to the Axeman. But there's no real proof to that. It's just, that seems to just be folklore at this point.
And in like 1919, it just stopped.
Yeah.
Just stopped.
It just all stopped.
Yeah, and we don't know why.
Nope.
But we do know that they were 12 victims mm-hmm. total. Some were murdered. And surprisingly, so many of them lived after getting hit in the head with an axe, which is, I thought was strange.
Yeah.
Well, that's not taking care of your tools properly.
Could be. You don't think he sharpened them before he used
them? And see, I also think that...
poor planning.
I think it might have been... I think he might have actually been targeting the women and the guys got in the way. That's how I saw it. But it may be... I mean, I don't know. It may be different.
Well, one of the first ones where they had the drunk guy that was going to war that you'll get into, that we'll get into here in a little bit. There were no women in that house.
Right. But there was also cases where it was just a woman in the house. So, Chuck, won't you tell us, let's start going down the list of the victims. Won't you tell us what you got?
Well, the first victims were the Maggios, Joseph and Catherine. They were grocers. They'd been married 15 years. Nothing really spectacular about them. They were just ordinary people, ordinary citizens in New Orleans. On May 22nd, 1918, Andrew, Joseph's brother, got his draft notice, and he was not pleased about getting drafted.
This was World War One.
World War One, yeah. And he went out and got liquored up. So
that's never nice.
Well, no. Nothing good ever comes from that.
Nothing, exactly. No. And he comes home, and he got home about 4 in the morning, and he hears groaning coming from a bedroom.
Of course.
Which, you know, is not unusual in New Orleans at 4 o'clock in the morning, but... So he goes to investigate, and he finds Jake and Catherine with profuse bleeding. They're in their bed. Catherine is on top of Joseph. Joseph's been hit with an axe a couple times. Now, Catherine had been hit in the head with an axe one time, but the killer took a straight razor and cut her throat. And he cut her throat so deeply it damn near severed her head. So they were both dead, obviously. And
wasn't the razor like his brother's or something like that?
Yeah, that's kind of the interesting thing about this was the axe that they were killed with and the razor that they were killed with were both in the house when the killer got there. The killer did not bring his weapons with him.
Poor planning.
Again, poor planning.
It is poor planning.
Good execution.
And almost in all these cases, like Brandy said, the axe was the homeowner's.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting point about the knife, using the blade, because that will come back when we talk about the suspects. We'll talk about that, too.
So. Yeah, and they assumed it happened right before dawn, and they were the first victims.
Yeah, they were both murdered.
They were both murdered. Yeah, they were both murdered. Apparently, possibly in their sleep, possibly not, as they found Catherine on top of Joseph. So, you know.
I'm not diving on top of my husband to save him from an axe murderer. I'm just saying.
He may have been using Catherine as a human shield. They may have been in the midst of a...
You think they were in the throes of passion?
Romantic trice.
A lovemaking session, perhaps.
A lovemaking session that went awry.
So awry. It took a left.
It did go awry.
Some people like rough sex, but I don't think they like it that rough.
Yeah. Okay, so...
apparently, they gave the murderer no safe word.
Apparently not. Okay, so these are our first victims. It was the DiMaggio's, and the next victim, the next attacks by this big soap opera. So the next victims were Louis this summer and his live-in mistress, Harriet Lowe.
Slut.
And it occurred on June 6th. And this was, like I said, this is kind of a soap opera. Mr. Bissumer was 59 years old, a native of Poland, but he was... So he wasn't Italian, but he was also a grocer, and they found him early in the morning. One of the guys who delivered bread to the store came to the store as usual and didn't see anyone, so he went around and knocked on the side door where he heard some movement inside, and then he opened the door, and Mr. Bissumer came out, and his head was all bloodied, face covered with blood. And he had, a head wound. And he pointed toward the bedroom. He didn't say anything. He just pointed toward the bedroom. And this delivery guy went to the bedroom where he found Harriet Lowe, who as I said, was Louis Bissumer's live-in mistress.
Slut.
And she was covered with blood. There was blood-soaked sheets. She had a terrible head wound. There was bloody footprints that led away from the bed on the floor. Keep that in mind for later. The delivery guy wanted to call the police, but oddly, Mr. Bissumer tried to stop him and wanted him to call a private physician instead. But the delivery guy said nah to that, and he contacted the police anyway, and ambulance came for both victims. Once again, they found that the assailant entered through the back door through a panel that was chiseled out, and a rusty hatchet or axe was the weapon, and it was found in Bissumer's bathroom. This became kind of a soap opera because both Mr. Bissumer and his mistress...
Slut.
Yeah. Harriet Lowe survived the attacks, but neither could really give a good description of the attacker. Mrs. Lowe said that she thought at first that that was someone, a mulatto character, who had attacked them, but Mr. Bissumer gave no indication. He couldn't remember. But they had this whole... affair thing going on that added to kind of the circus of this whole event. So Miss Lowe goes to the hospital. She's in there a couple days. The police is investigating, and they talk to Mr. Bissumer, and he asked them if he could conduct his own investigation, which they thought was kind of odd.
Shady.
Shady. And
should have called Scooby.
Yeah, but in the end, the police would not let him do that, of course. And Mrs. Lowe ended up a couple weeks later going to have some surgery, and she died. So she actually died of her wounds and the surgery that resulted from her wounds. But before she died, she pointed a finger at Louis Bissumer as the guy who attacked her. Which I thought was kind of odd that he would attack her and then hit himself in the head with an axe, but...
Hey, you know, it's called commitment.
He was committed. So, not only that, Mr. Bissumer's, in the midst of all this drama, Mr. Bissumer's real wife from Cincinnati shows up And this becomes kind of a big scandal, and it becomes like a media circus. Mrs. Lowe also, Harriet Lowe, before she died, claimed that Mr. Basumer had hit her with the axe, and also that he was a German spy, which was interesting. And so this was during the First World War, so there was a, you know, everyone was kind of on high alert for anti-American activity. So she threw the old German spy allegation.
Right out there, didn't
right
she?
Right out there, yeah. And jeez, there were neighbors who said that they knew that Lewis and Harriet were doing opiates. So there was
everybody was doing opiates.
The drug angle to this. I wonder if the DEA didn't. If the DEA was in existence, I'm sure they would have gotten
this would involved. Be scandalous if it happened tomorrow.
It would
be scandalous. And these people were dead at the time, so she could basically say anything she wanted about it.
Well,
the neighbors said they were doing opiates.
Yeah, the neighbors were throwing those allegations. Actually, the federal investigators did come in and investigate this whole spy angle, but they kind of said, nah, this was a lover squabble, and they just kind of dropped it. But anyway, Mr. Basumer actually does get charged with this murder, but based on Harriet Lowe's allegations before she died. But the jury went out about 10 minutes, and they found him not guilty because they said there was just not enough evidence. And they thought his strange actions was due to the fact he was just trying to cover up the affair, not that he was trying to cover up any attack. And the fact, as I said, he also was attacked, made it kind of hard to believe that he...
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
He was actually the one who committed this crime. Harriet Lowe died 2 weeks after the attack occurred, and on the same day that she died... there was another attack. In this case, it was a young 19-year-old woman named Mrs. Snyder, and we don't know her first name. We couldn't find that in research, but she was married to a businessman named Edward Snyder. Mrs. Snyder was alone at the time of the attack. She was 9 months pregnant, and it occurred in the afternoon. She doesn't remember anything other than she was taking a nap and she woke up and she saw a dark figure standing over her with an axe, and then he hit her with the axe and made a wound to her head and knocked out some of her teeth. She was hospitalized, and but she survived, and a week later gave birth to a healthy baby.
Now, that attack occurred in the afternoon, which is different than a lot of the other ones.
Yes, and then she was a female alone, a two, which was
which different. Is different.
Yeah, exactly. So, as I said, she was pregnant, the baby survived, and then after that, there was another attack.
Well, and which is a little inconsistent with that attack. The attack's the same, but the behavior of the attacker is not the same in this one. The next guy was... let's see, that was Joseph Romano. Now, he was a grocer, too. And he was an old guy living with his two nieces.
Perv.
Two adult nieces.
They're pervy.
Yeah, I'm not really sure
what was going on there.
They're probably old maids.
Now, this might not even have been an Axeman murder. This could be a PMS murder. I mean, you're literally like two grown women.
Really? That's what we're going with? PMS murder?
You're literally two grown women. You, well, now here's the facts of this. Okay. Guy comes in, finds his axe, just like he does in every other murder. All right. Now, first of all, why in the hell you got an axe in your house?
Well, especially when the axe man is coming.
When the axe man is coming, hide the damn axe.
You do need to hide your axe. And I was thinking about why all these people would have axes, because right now, you know, now nobody would have an axe, you know.
Oh, Renee sleeps with a hatchet.
Well, I'm sure she does. But now nobody would have an axe. But, you know, back then they cut for firewood, they cut to...
Well,
you know,
you can't swing a dead cat
without hitting an axe. So, I mean, so, you know, they had to cut wood and different things in order to eat and heat water and do all these kinds of things.
Man,
so everybody would have, no, it would suck. And that's why I was born in this time, this great time to be alive where we can spy on people and do all these fun things.
We have an app for that.
But we have an app to find an axe.
Yes.
But... you know, that's why all these people had axes, was because, you know, that's what they needed it.
Well, I'd have put that shit away. He'd have killed me with a
spoon. Oh, well, you'd need to lock it in a gun safe.
If he came in my house, he would have had to kill me with a spoon. Because that's
spork.
All I would have had
a
out.
Spork.
A spork. He wouldn't have... So, anyway, getting back to Joseph Romano. I'm not saying he may have been diddling the two nieces. They were adults. So,
yeah.
You
why
know.
Would you say that?
No, I'm not saying he did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Make
you just kind of put it out there.
Yeah, because we...
No, this is my Glenn Beck part of the show.
Oh,
I'm not saying he was...
Right.
There was anything...
Amiss
with this relationship.
Sure.
You're backing off those allegations.
But here is something... No, it's a question I'm throwing out there for our listeners.
It's a question, though, not a statement.
Right. So, but here's an interesting thing about him, is he was a grocer, old guy. Had a little bit of money, but not really wealthy. Had two nieces living with him. Now, in your case, the axe man comes over and the woman screams, and he whacks the hell out of her with an axe. Now, in this case, one niece discovers the body, discovers not the body, but actually him. He had been gravely wounded. But the other niece awakes, finds a shadowy, dark figure over the top of her holding an axe, Pauline, his niece Pauline. She screams and he runs away. Now, that leads me to believe there was no axe man in that house. There was a torqued-off woman that needed a Reese cup, and the uncle said something wrong.
Really?
That's my theory on this. Now, he's listed as one of the victims of the axe man, but the pattern doesn't fit. Because had Pauline screamed, he would have just hit her in the forehead with the axe.
So you think this is a copycat?
I think it's a copycat.
I think
the
lot
girls
of
took advantage of it. Again, the house was ransacked, but nothing was taken.
Yeah, and that's the same with almost all of these, right? There's no robbery or anything.
There's no robbery.
No motive. But when Pauline screams, why doesn't she get the axe in the forehead?
Maybe he was cutting her. Maybe she liked jazz.
He knew she liked jazz.
Or maybe...
He was never there.
Maybe, Mr. Romano, he forgot to put his teacup away.
Are you kidding me right now? We need to get off the PMS label.
No, I'm just saying, when you live with your two nieces and you're an old guy, and you can get on their nerves a little bit. So anyway, now here's another thing about Joseph. He was a tough old guy. Now, he took a couple axe shots to the head, got up and walked to the damn ambulance.
That's a man.
Walked to the damn
That's
ambulance.
A man for you.
Oh, that
they
is,
don't
that,
make him like that anymore. You
no,
would take one axe shot to the head
you know
and be done.
Because after living with two nieces for however long...
He just wanted out.
He just wanted out. He didn't care. It was like, shit, hit me with an axe. He might have hit himself with the damn axe just to get out.
I see an axe, I'm in a fetal position.
You know what? They could have been going back and forth, the cackling or whatever, or, you know, just driving him crazy. He hit him damn self in the head with an axe. I mean, Tim, you've been married. How many times have you wanted to hit yourself in the head with an axe?
I want to hit you in the head with an axe.
My ex might be listening, so I'm not going to comment on that.
Okay, well, I will say, just last night, I wanted to hit myself in the head with an axe.
You should have called me. I'd have done it for you.
Okay.
Yes. I'm sure Renee would have done it. If
right.
She only
just ask.
Know.
Just
and then
ask.
He dies two
you
days later.
You need to leave an axe in your home.
I
on the porch.
Renee has an axe.
Put it.
But the one of the more interesting, to get back onto Mr. Romano, is that he gets hit in the head with the axe, the hatchet, walks out to the ambulance, dies 2 days later, and gives them absolutely no information on the killer. None at all.
That's a theme.
Yeah, none of these, I mean, all the information they have is either it's a dark figure or...
His niece, Pauline, said it was a dark-skinned, heavy-set, shadowy, that term keeps coming up, shadowy figure with an odd hat. Now, it could have been the Frito Bandito. I don't know.
Like, he's known for that.
Yeah, I know.
But you know, the thing is, when you start getting into New Orleans and the history of New Orleans and the really rich culture that's down in New Orleans, you start getting into, you know, first of all, these people are, you know, have great faith in voodoo. They have, you know, they fear, they believe in ghosts. They have all these things, especially back in the early 1900s, that, you know, they have these things that they believe. And so for somebody to say it's a shadowy figure, well, first of all, obviously right away it's going to be something of another world. Because they believe
right.
that stuff.
And that's the kind of... And you had the panels that were too small for really a human to crawl through. Mm-hmm. And so then, they pick up and it becomes almost mythology. That there's this spirit that comes through. Like, if it's a spirit, it could go under the floor or something. It doesn't need to chisel anything out. Right.
No, however, the types of doors, like I have a panel door.
Right.
If you wanted to get into my door, the way to do it is to chisel out a panel, reach through and unlock the door.
Yeah.
And these people, for some reason, seem to think that the killer...
Didn't do that.
...seethed through the door.
Yeah.
He, you know, came through and...
Well, yeah, like Brandy said, it was, you know, the whole New Orleans thing with the voodoo and all that's going on. And that's what makes this kind of hard to get all the facts of this case, is because it's, you know, there's so much the supernatural stuff surrounding it. We know that these things happen, these attacks happen. But it's hard when it gets, these stories get embellished. Okay, so Brandy, who's our next victims? Who are our next victims?
Well, I actually did a little research on it was a family. It was Charles, Rosie, and Mary Cortamagilia. And Charles, late on March 10th in 1919, they actually lived in a suburb of New Orleans called Gretna. And, you know, late in the evening on March 10th, you know, neighbors come running over. They hear these screams. And so these neighbors come running over, and they meet Rosie at the door with her infant daughter, Mary. Rosie's just jacked up. She's got a serious head wound. She's bleeding all over the floor. She's making a mess. The tragedy to this is she's holding her dead 2-year-old who'd been struck in the back of the head with an axe. So the baby's dead. And the neighbors go on into the house and they discover Charles, and he's laying on the floor and he's got this just huge gaping wound in his torso. So everybody goes to the hospital. Obviously the 2-year-old is pronounced DOA. Everybody goes to the hospital. And they release Rosie. And Rosie starts talking to the police. And she claims that this Orlando Giordano and his 18-year-old son, Frank, were the ones that were responsible for this attack.
These are neighbors?
They are neighbors. They also own another grocery store. And there was some tension between these two families. They had a feud, you might say.
Oh, competition.
Yes, they had a feud. It was a grocer's feud. So she claims it was these two guys. Now, the father, who was almost 70 years old, Orlando, he was just in poor health. There was just no way he was going to commit these crimes. And Frank, the son, was over 6 foot tall, and he weighed over 200 pounds. There's no way he's fitting through the little panel in the door that was cut out. It just wasn't going to happen. Her story doesn't add up. not only does her story not add up, but when they ask Charles about it, Charles is swearing up and down, no, 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 it was not them, it was not them, it was not them. But they arrest them. And they arrest them and they charge them, and they're found guilty, actually. And Frank was sentenced to hang, and Irelando was sentenced to life in prison. After the trial, this created so much tension within the marriage of Charles and Rosie, they divorced, which wasn't as common back then, but they divorced after this trial, just created so much animosity.
Because he said she was lying.
He said she's lying. Yeah. This is not what happened. Now, it doesn't say, Charles never makes another statement about who he thinks it is. Mm-hmm. And actually, Rosie, not till about 10 years later, Rosie finds Jesus and comes forward and says that, you know, they didn't do it. Meanwhile, these guys are sitting in prison, one of them on death row and the other one's just hanging out. So she has, this paper has a year. There's another source that says, that states 10 years. But she walks into the police station and she announces that she lied. She's found Jesus and she announces that she lied. And the Giordanos get released from jail. However, they never found out who attacked this family, and you know, killed the baby girl.
And I'm guessing it was about a year, because back in those times, appeals didn't take so long. If you were sentenced to hang, you hung pretty quickly.
Well, right, you would think so.
Is this the one that had the eight people in the?
No,
there was one case where there was like eight people in a house, and no one could describe the attacker.
No, what I don't understand, what I'm struggling with is every source, and again, this stuff is spotty, but every source states that Mary was killed while sleeping in her mother's arms with a single blow to the back of the neck. So what I don't understand is the physics of that.
Human shield.
She's using the baby as a human shield. Well, she's obviously not a good person. I mean, you know,
she falsely accused
the people that find her. These are the neighbors that ran over when she screamed. These are the neighbors that are offering her help. And she turns around and accuses them. So she's a craptastic person.
Well, but, you know, she also just lost her daughter. So, I mean, you know, maybe that she saw them and they come for help, and then she just in hysteric.
And I get that, and I'll give her a pass on that for maybe a month, maybe even two, but whether it's a year or 10, she doesn't come forward till long after. I mean, and Chuck's right; these guys could have been the one guy. Frank could have been killed,
right?
In the meantime.
So we know that they didn't do it, and they were exonerated. Okay. Okay, so then after these attacks, I believe is when we have the letter that Chuck had read earlier appear in the New Orleans. Is it New Orleans Time Picayune?
New Orleans Time Picayune.
Yeah. So the letter appears, and now everyone is on edge, right? Everyone is freaked out over this axe man that is on the loose in the city, apparently attacking people at random in their homes. And we were talking earlier, the interesting thing about the letter that in the paper, as Chuck said, the axe man promised not to murder anyone who played jazz music on that particular Tuesday or whatever.
Yeah, that night. Yeah, and it worked. It was louder than Mardi Gras that night.
But the funny thing is that there were some people who were actually inviting the Axeman into their homes. They wrote letters to the newspapers saying, you know, come up to my house.
Right. Don't break the door.
Yeah.
I'll leave a window open.
Please don't break my door.
Like the Motel 6. Yeah. We'll leave a light on for you.
They were mostly guys who had been married 10, 15, 20 years.
So
they just said, you know, hey, come and get me. What do I do?
Obviously, some people were calling bullshit on the whole letter.
Were they hoping he showed up.
Or maybe they wanted to get the axe. But there were actually two attacks that occurred after the letter went out. On August the 10th, a man by the name of Steve Bucco, who was, guess his profession?
He was a grocer.
Yes, he was a grocer. He was an Italian grocer, and he was attacked in his sleep by an axe. With the help of a friend, he was able to get to the hospital, but he had no memories of the details of the attack. But again, a panel had been chiseled out from his door, and the axe was left in his kitchen. Nothing had been taken. Then 3 weeks after that attack, on September 3rd, someone gained entry into the home of Sarah Lauman. But this time they didn't go through a door panel. But she was found unconscious in her bed with multiple head wounds to her head and a bloody axe outside the unopened window. So she survived. Steve Bucco survived. But some of the folks were not so fortunate. So
now she was... was she... There was only one victim. One of the victims was black. Was that Sarah?
Yeah, it was Sarah. That was
okay,
Sarah.
She was the only black victim. Everyone else... If you look at this, everyone else has a name that ends in a vowel.
Is that what we're going with now?
Well, okay, I mean, this so, is like the...
Well, I mean, what part
was.
Of it
I mean,
is
the victims
like,
are Pepitone...
Yeah, the
Maggio.
One of the thoughts is that there was some racial overtones to this. That the attacker was picking on Italian Americans. Who, you know, this was a time during right in the midst of World War I, and you know, there was a lot of immigration going on in the U.S. and I don't know so much New Orleans. I mean, I'm not sure that played a factor in it, but there were many of the victims were of Italian descent.
And grocers,
for some reason, grocers.
I think someone was... It's possible that someone was making a move on the grocer.
Someone got overcharged.
Well, no.
That's what happened.
Someone was trying to consolidate their grocery industry, much like...
When they
opened up gambling in Atlantic City, they had the mob wars.
Yeah, well, one of the theories, and we'll get into this next show, is that the these were mob hits, as Brandy mentioned earlier. You know, one of the theories is that the mob was trying to shake down these grocers to pay protection money.
Mob doesn't kill women.
And there's been no real evidence of that. There was, that was a theory, but it's been, it hasn't been substantiated. And all the victims weren't grocers. Most of them were, but not all, and not all were Italian. So it's a mystery. But it's a mystery that we're going to solve next episode, because
we
Scooby-Doo and the Mystery Machine.
Yeah, we have dug deeper.
We have dug deeper, and
we have a suspect.
We have a suspect, and we're going
to... A viable suspect
that we will reveal in part two of this series on the New Orleans axe murders. So make sure to tune in for that. Until then, Brandy, Chuck, anything you want to add?
Good day, sir.
Thank you.
No.
Foghorn Leghorn. Brandy, anything you want to add?
Not after that. No, I'm good.
Okay, so make sure you tune in next time to History Dweebs. Until then, we'll be seeing you later, and keep playing the jazz music.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.